This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says he'll reveal the naked truth about the death of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in remarks later Tuesday. Omer Çelik, a spokesman for Mr. Erdogan's ruling Justice and Development Party, said the killing was planned in an extremely savage manner. There has been an effort to cover it up. Riyadh initially said Khashoggi left the consulate by himself Sunday. The Saudi foreign minister acknowledged he was killed in a rogue operation, result of an altercation done without the knowledge of the monarchy's leadership. President Donald Trump said top U.S. officials are gathering information in both Saudi Arabia and Turkey and will report to him later. He described the relationship with the Saudi Arabians as complicated.
I am not satisfied with what I've heard. I don't want to lose all of that investment that's being made in our country. I don't want to lose a million jobs. I don't want to lose $110 billion in terms of investment, but it's really $450 billion if you include other than military. So that's very important. But we're going to get to the bottom of it.
President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's developed a personal relationship with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, called on him to be transparent, telling him the world is watching. UN Africa Union envoy Jeremiah Mavabolo for Sudan's restive Darfur region told the Security Council Monday that Sudan Liberation Army founder Abdul Wahid Elder refuses to join the peace process.
I urge the Council to consider stern action against the SLA leader because from all accounts, he prefers belligerence and armed struggle to cessation of hostilities and a political process.
Conflict in the last 15 years left hundreds of thousands dead and millions displaced in Darfur. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump reaffirmed Monday his intention to withdraw from the 1987 Intermediate-Range Nuclear Forces, or INF, treaty, accusing Russia of violating its terms.
Not only stop, we'll reduce, which I would love to do, but right now they have not entered the agreement. It's a threat to whoever you want, and it includes China, and it includes Russia, and it includes anybody else that wants to play the game. You can't do that. You can't play that game on me.
Mr. Trump's comments came as his national security adviser, John Bolton, was in Moscow discussing the matter with Russian officials. A Kremlin spokesman warned such a move could make the world more dangerous. U.S. officials believe Moscow is developing and has deployed a ground launch system in breach of the treaty designed to reduce the nuclear threat of short and intermediate-range missiles in Europe. President Trump also said he's begun the process of reducing or ending financial assistance to at least three Central American countries for failing to halt a caravan of thousands of migrants moving through Mexico heading toward the U.S. border.
Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, they're paid a lot of money. Every year we give them foreign aid. And they did nothing for us, nothing. They did nothing for us. So we give them tremendous amounts of money. You know what it is. You cover it all the time. Hundreds of millions of dollars. They, like a lot of others, do nothing for our country.
As many as 10,000 Central Americans are moving by foot and on vehicles north to escape poverty and violence. The president has threatened to use the military to halt the caravan should it reach the southern U.S. border. The two Koreas and the U.N. command agreed Monday to measures to demilitarize the area around the truce village of Panmunjom in a second round of talks. 11 guard posts are to be withdrawn by year's end and firearms removed from the so-called joint security area and personnel reduced. They've already removed landmines that dotted the landscape of the so-called JSA. China's Vice President Wang Qishan Monday became the highest-ranking Chinese official to visit Israel in nearly two decades. The two countries are seeking to strengthen business ties. He visited Old Jerusalem and met Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu. Mr. Wang is scheduled to visit the West Bank on Tuesday. Two U.S. warships sailed through the Taiwan Strait Monday. The USS Curtis Wilbur and USS Antietam conducted what's called routine transit to demonstrate the U.S. commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific. Chinese warships shadowed the two vessels. The Washington-based Museum of the Bible acknowledged Monday at least five of the 16 artifacts it claimed were fragments of ancient manuscripts known as the Dead Sea Scrolls are forgeries and have been removed. A German research institution said they were not old enough. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's Parliament Monday passed a bill establishing a commission of inquiry to investigate alleged corruption in former President Ernest Bai Koroma's government.
The commission will also interview heads and chairmen of parastatals, departments and agencies within the period from November 2007 to April 2018 and investigate whether assets were acquired unlawfully from the individuals listed above.
Honorable Sir Matthew Nyuma is a member of Sierra Leone's parliament. Two members of Kenya's parliament are expected in court today, Tuesday, for allegedly inciting deadly tribal clashes. Zimbabwe authorities are worried about medical drugs on the black market. And Cameroon's 85-year-old President Paul Biya has been declared winner of the October 7th election.
History holds it that what happened on the 7th of October 2018 was worse than anything witnessed before. It was everything except an election.
Joshua Osi was the presidential candidate of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party. Voting machines for DRC's December election have started arriving, and Nigeria's ruling APC party says it stands by its criticism of opposition PDP candidate Atiku Abubakar. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone's parliament late Monday passed a bill establishing a commission of inquiry to investigate alleged corruption in former President Ernest Bai Koroma's APC-led government. The former ruling APC failed to use its majority in parliament to stop the bill from becoming law. Instead, it has accused the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, of witch hunt. A government report has accused President Koroma and senior officials of his government of rampant corruption and abuse of office. Honorable Sir Matthew Nyuma is a member of Sierra Leone's parliament. He says the commission of inquiry will interview not only former President Koroma, but also former heads of parastatals and departments and agencies from November 2007 to April 2018 to determine whether the assets were acquired illegally.
Section 147 of the 1991 Constitution, Act No. 6, gives the president power in his commission of inquiry of any matter of public interest. So the president invoked a particular provision in the Constitution. And the statutory instrument we debated was covering shades of activities within the commission that's going to be set up. One, you also know who and who are going to be investigated in the commission of inquiry that we have just passed. Person who will have president, vice president, ministers, offense of state and deputy ministers. Two, the commission will also interview heads and chairmen of parastatals, departments and agencies within the period from November 2007 to April 2018 and investigate whether assets were acquired lawfully or unlawfully from the individuals listed above.
Will the work of the commission include an investigation of the former president, Mr. Koroma?
If the baseline for the GT report mentioned, they are going to interview him. They are going to investigate him. So that's the reason I've cited the first provision, that they are going to interview people or investigate persons who are president, vice president, ministers, and deputy ministers. Yes, if there's anything the commission wants to know about the president acquiring assets lawfully or unlawfully, it's going to be interviewed.
The former ruling party, the APC, has the majority in parliament. How was it able to get this commission of inquiry approved?
Section 170 of the Constitution, subsection 7, gives the power for members to vote for two-thirds. If you don't want the commission to be set up, you need two-thirds members of parliament to nullify the statutory instrument, that is, not to set the commission. So today we are 141. You need to get 94 votes to nullify the statutory instrument. There's a single party, they have the majority, but you are not able to get a vote to nullify the statutory instrument. So that's what exactly happened.
The former ruling party, APC, has accused both the Anti-Corruption Commission and the ruling SLPP of witch hunt.
No, it's not a witch hunt. They have the right as foreigners to go before the commission and defend themselves. If they think the commission has not treated them fairly, they have the right to appeal. So I don't see as witch hunts. Don't forget, we took over governance. A bad economy. The economy is bad for us, and to even push government agenda is difficult for us. We are not getting donor support. Donors have alleged that their money is siphoned, and these are taxpayers' money, and people are not accounting for taxpayers' money. So even the advice given to them by the Auditor General, they are not taking it seriously. So you cannot say a witch hunt, because the rules and regulations are going to come out, and these are going to be very clear how the commission are going to run. This is not a kangaroo court. It's about sanitizing the system. It's about fighting corruption to the level we can.
Honorable Matthew Nyuma, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you very much again for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Sir Matthew Nyuma is a member of Sierra Leone's Parliament. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Two members of Kenya's Parliament are expected in court today, Tuesday, for allegedly inciting deadly tribal clashes in the east of the country. Director of Criminal Investigation, George Kinuti, said the two men, Chachu Ganya and Dido Ali Russell, were taken to the Nairobi Criminal Investigation Headquarters for questioning. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, more than 14 people have been killed and hundreds displaced by the tribal clashes.
The two North Horn Member of Parliament, Chachu Ganya, and his circle counterpart, Dido Ali Russell, were among several leaders grilled last week as detectives probed claims that politicians from rival communities were funding the flare-ups and inciting violence in the region. The efforts by the government to restore peace in Marsabit County have not been successful, as political leaders have always been blamed for the conflict. Speaking after the arrest of the two political leaders from the region led by Bura Member of Parliament Ali Wario, said that the arrest of the two will provoke the fight. They also said the arrest is likely to jeopardize the peace campaign that is ongoing in the region.
There is a peace process ongoing. Communities were brought together. Some agreements have been reached lately yesterday. Arresting these leaders today is to drain the process which have started. I mean, it won't be an antidote to the ongoing problem.
Back to the arrest of the two leaders. We are yet to see the charges, but going by what they were told, the statement that they recorded in Marsabit, I think they are trying to be blamed for the failure of the security to again ensure that there is peace.
The two were arrested in Marsabit and driven to Nairobi for grilling at the Directorate of Criminal Investigation headquarters. They were later hailed at Kilelesho Police Station in Nairobi as they are waiting to be arraigned in court today, Tuesday. The Marsabit leaders also blamed the Kenyan government for not doing much to curb the situation in the region, given the fact that these fights erupt frequently in the area, leading to massive loss of lives.
And for the sake of our students, we are pleading with the government to bring that peace that we need on the ground. As leaders, we have played our part. We have made enough resolutions.
We are planning to go to Marsabit and all the other countries where communities are fighting to ensure that there is a lasting peace now that we have been abandoned and we are on our own.
The government should respect the peace process ongoing in the county and support that process, not derailing it.
Earlier last week, Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i said intelligence reports had indicated that politicians are involved in funding the clashes. Hundreds of people in the region have fled for safety as nearly 2,000 students risk missing out on the Kenya National Examination that is set to begin next week if the clashes will continue in the areas.
We would like to make more arrests, and the full force of the law will be met by those who are trying to engage in the kind of nonsense they're engaging in. This thing is being supported by some people, and the law will face them regardless of their status. They will all be arrested. You will not use human life as corrupt political nonsense.
Mr. Ganya and Dido Ali are expected in court this Tuesday morning to answer incitement allegations against them. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 23rd. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Cameroon's longtime leader, Paul Biya, has been declared the winner of the country's October 7 presidential poll. Opposition parties are rejecting the results, but the Constitutional Council has already thrown out petitions to nullify the election. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Suffrage en faveur de chaque candidat. Biya Paul, Diamare.
This is the voice of Clément Atangana, president of Cameroon's Constitutional Council, reading election results on Monday. According to the results, incumbent President Paul Biya won a landslide victory with 71% of the vote. His strongest challenger, Maurice Kamto, was a distant second with 14%. Seven other candidates scored vote percentages in the single digits. John Gute, Biya's close aide and minister in charge of special duties, said he is not surprised at the president's victory. He says Cameroonians are aware that Biya has done much for them and is ready to do more for the country's development.
For Biya, we know the man who is very persevering, the person who is very patient, the one who is very honest, and who is candid, and who tells Cameroonians what can be done and what is not possible to be done. The man who is peace-loving, and the man who wants good for Cameroon.
Angry protesters came out singing that Biya had stolen Maurice Kamto's victory, but were quickly dispersed by heavily armed troops. Augusta Bate supports Kamto.
We want justice. We should not only preach democracy, we should practice it as well. The presidential elections, even Biya knows Kamto won this presidential election, so he should just let him take over power.
Joshua Osi of the main opposition Social Democratic Front, who finished fourth in the election, says he does not recognize the election results.
History holds it that one head of state using the entire government, army, police, and state resources to maintain himself in power. History holds it that what happened on the 7th of October 2018 was worse than anything witnessed before. It was everything except an election.
Last week, Cameroon's Constitutional Council threw out 18 petitions filed by Kamto, Osi and others demanding the election be nullified. The opposition parties allege widespread irregularities, insecurity and low turnout, especially in the restive Anglophone regions. But the court ruled there was not enough evidence to throw out the results. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A spokesman for Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition says if elections can be held in places like Afghanistan and Cameroon, then Congo's December 31st election can take place. This as violence in parts of the country has led to concerns that the country may not be safe for an election. Meanwhile, the country's controversial voting machines have begun arriving in the country. The opposition has raised concerns that the machines are vulnerable to vote rigging. Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition.
The election are supposed to be held on 23 of December. And I think the last machine is supposed to arrive in Congo at 4th November. But now we have in Congo about 60,000 machines. More than 20,000 in Kinshasa, the same quantity in Matadi, and almost the same in Lubumbashi. And the total expected is about 106,000 machines. So I think really there is no problem for machines reaching Congo and to be they're dispatching over the national territory.
You and I, we spoke about these machines, and I said to you that the opposition think that the introduction of these machines is an attempt by the government to cheat because they believe the people are not used to, or these machines are easily maneuverable.
You know, Westminster Foundation for Democracy, this is a cabinet, a British cabinet, came here to make an audit. And according to their report, this machine is a machine of confidence. You cannot treat. And CNI is busy making sure all over the country for this machine, how to use it, what can happen the using of machine or during the day of the vote. So this report is very, very credible.
How is it possible to reach every part of the country when you have rebels and you have also Ebola? Just the news on Sunday say that the rebels killed 13 people and abducted a dozen of children in Beni area. So people are concerned, how would this election be free and fair if parts of the country are not safe?
This is a technical, logical problem or issue to ask to Beni. But as politician, I can say, if it is possible to organize election and vote in Afghanistan, in Iraq, even in Cameroon, why not in Congo? Congo is a very, very big country, and the army is there. The army is able to ensure security during the vote.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC Kabila's ruling coalition. You're speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Nigeria's ruling All Progressive Congress APC party says it stands by its criticism of Atiku Abubakar, the presidential candidate of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP. Information Minister Lai Mohammed had reportedly said that the international media had questions about Abubakar's emergence as presidential candidate of the PDP. The PDP responded by calling Mohammed the high priest of the APC's cult of fake news. But Mohammed tells me he stands by his criticism.
Yes, anywhere where you see a sign that says no thoroughfare, it is a vote. The velocity with which the PDP and the Abubakar campaign is vehemently denying my assertion is proof that what I said is true. I was in the UK and I engaged several think tanks, media organizations at Chatham House, and it occurred to me that on several occasions, when I told them how far we had gone in fighting corruption, they said, look, how come that if you are really fighting corruption, that a single candidate with 10 years on the framework can come as a candidate of a major party? And I was happy to explain that, listen, we are fighting corruption, but we have actually no control over the choice of candidates of the other party. But I stand by what I said, and no amount of intimidation, no amount of verification can change it. I thought for the truth, not the truth.
But, like, they say that you said that the international media organizations had questioned the emergence of Atiku Abubakar as the presidential candidate of the PDP. But they say that you gave no example of the international media organizations.
James, I am under no obligation to say, this organization said this or that. But I said, and I know for a fact, that not two organizations that are engaged in actually expressed surprise and said, I can't say that they are fighting corruption. They are entitled to their opinions. Is it because the Atiku as a matter of fact, that's why I will not report that? That's what happened. That's what happened. And it's also, honest, like I said, I can be intimidated. You can spend the whole of the year when you find me. That is exactly what happened. That is exactly what I repeated. Well, you see, on the day of the election, Nigerians will speak with their vote. And frankly speaking, James, we do not feel threatened one bit by the PDP.
I'd like to ask you about the situation in Kaduna where there's been this killings. Can you tell us, please, what the government doing?
Well, the government, I think, has crafted their security forces to prevent any kind of contamination. I'm made to understand that the whole trouble started when some youth were trying to avenge the alleged killing of some Muslims in a place called Kasuwan Magami. But that the governor took a preventive action by declaring a 24-hour curfew. And I think that has helped a lot in the country situation. But meanwhile, the police is on top of the matter.
Lai Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. You're speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Authorities in Zimbabwe say the country's economic crisis has resulted in an acute shortage of essential medical drugs. Officials say the shortage has pushed some people to turn to the black market for medicines, some of which are not certified by the Drug Control Authority. Columbus Mavonga reports from Harare.
For nearly 10 years now, Lena Lukwani has been taking 5 different types of medication to ease her diabetes and hypertension. The 77-year-old Lukwani says she used to pay about $50 for her medication, but says the situation has become dire in the past few months with prices doubling. She says some drugs are in short supply. These days it is difficult. Out of the 5, I only got 2. It has been like that for the past 2 months. So I've been limiting my diet, especially starch. I'm blessed because of the children I have, but that is not the same for my colleagues who are also diabetic and are hypertensive. Her 7 children living around the globe managed to send her medication that was not readily available for 3 months. Otherwise, Lukwane said she would have continued on her controlled diet or turned to black market for help. Shingai Gwatizo is the spokesman of the Medicines Control Authority of Zimbabwe.
A lot of people try and take advantage of the current situation. So you have a lot of unregulated markets that are coming up. Medicines are being smuggled into the country, and we have not tested them to make sure that they are safe. So in essence, one would be actually taking a risk by going to buy medicines from the street.
Potifa Mwendera, president of the Pharmaceutical Society of Zimbabwe, acknowledges the health sector is failing to import enough antibiotics as well as drugs for ailments such as cancer, diabetes, and hypertension.
The drug situation is pretty dire currently. Our main worry is that if the situation currently prevailing continues, we get a lot more complications in our patients, and we might actually lose some patients. So what has cropped up and which is more worrying is the parallel market for medicines. We are now seeing a lot more people advertising that they can sell medications into Zimbabwe.
On a number of occasions, police and vendors with medicines have engaged in street battles in Harare, only to see the vendors back on the streets the next day. The vendors argue that they have no other source of income, and if the market has demand, they will remain in business by importing the drugs from neighboring countries. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sierra Leone's parliament late Monday passed a bill establishing a commission of inquiry to investigate alleged corruption in former President Ernest Bai Koroma's APC-led government. The former ruling APC failed to use its majority in parliament to stop the bill from becoming law. Instead, it has accused the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, of witch hunt. A government report has accused President Koroma and senior officials of his government of rampant corruption and abuse of office. The report the commission will investigate will interview members of Mr. Koroma's former cabinet members, as well as leaders of parastatals and agencies. And that is it for this Tuesday, October 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison. I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a productive day.
Hello, I'm Lenore Moudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will take a look at health systems with our guest, Dr. Margaret Crook, Associate Professor of Global Health at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.